Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They called me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul, Mission Control, Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. War. What is it good for?
No, we're not going to do the song.
Well, there's absolutely nothing, but then it also makes me think of the quote from the Fallout games, "War never changes," you know, all of that. Those are my two top war quotes, is the song and the... I also love a band that has a song like named after the name of their band. I think that's such a really sick flex.
Like Radiohead.
Well, war.
No, that's not true.
It's not true. There is a Talking Heads song called Radiohead, which is where the name came from. But anyway,
yeah,
it's not good for much, except for, you know.
Well,
I mean, it's a means to an end.
Let's talk about what it's good for. Reducing the population overall. Great.
That's true.
Medical innovation, scientific progress, technological breakthroughs. And
damn, you make it sound awesome.
It's a number. It's a number one pick for unintended consequences as well. We've heard of Agent Orange, and if you are a longtime listener of the show, you have heard about it as well, and the horrific effects that substance wrought upon civilians and military alike during the Vietnam War. In a previous conversation on listener mail, an anonymous conspiracy realist reached out to us to ask us about something called PB pills. It's a disturbing substance, little known outside of the military or medical school. We had not heard of it before our listener reached out. However, according to firsthand sources, this may be the real explanation behind the notorious, still not fully understood collection of symptoms called Gulf War Syndrome. Here are the facts. We have to talk about the Gulf War. It's something that happened in recent history, right? In the 1990s, early 1990s. It's sometimes called the Persian Gulf War. Sometimes in a very dystopian way, it's referred to as the First War because there was another one. But what happened for anybody who is unfamiliar with Saddam Hussein?
Well, the United States led a coalition of 42 countries against Iraq, which at that point was under the control of the dictator Saddam Hussein. You might have heard of him. He was kind of the first, I don't know, maybe not the first, but it was a really important moment for war coverage. So he almost attained this like celebrity status in a weird way as this like big bad who was elevated by the press and the video, the television media. If you want to hear more about this guy, please do check out Robert Evans' excellent series on Behind the Bastard. Bastards, excuse me. He's one particular bastard here.
But in the end, at least my understanding is that it was between Iraq and Kuwait, right? There was conflict there.
It had something to do with being in debt, right? So Iraq actually owed a ton of money to Kuwait, and rather than, you know, coming through with the payments, they came through with tanks and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so right now, speculation about the logic behind Iraq's invasion of Kuwait, it still thrives, but you're correct, I would say, Matt, that it does seem to go down to money. Because in, I think it was August 2nd of 1990, Hussein's forces invaded Kuwait and they overran the country in like 48 hours or less. It was very much a one-sided conflict there. And
George W. Bush described the second invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan as like, oh, it's just going to be like 48 hours. That actually happened in this case.
Yes. Yeah. Now, Hussein did not call it a crusade. Yeah, give him that. He was also an aspiring romance novelist. Again, Behind the Bastards, check out the series. It's wild. The Iraqi forces declared ownership over Kuwait's northern territory, and all of the rest of it came under the governance of a puppet state, you know, similar to Japan's actions on the Chinese mainland. And you know, here's why most people agree money was the impetus for Hussein. Iraq had borrowed the equivalent of $14 billion from Kuwait to finance another war against Iran. And Kuwait, like most creditors, wanted to be paid back. They wanted their bag. But at the same time, Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates were overshooting the quotas that OPEC sets for oil production. And this is a big deal to Iraq because they're an oil export reliant country at the time. So the main way that they can pay back this debt is being aggressively devalued. And in the government statements at this period of time, they're pretty blunt about it. The Iraqi government says Kuwait is doing this on purpose to make it difficult or impossible to pay back their debt. They wanted to put Iraq in a financial hole and to keep it there.
So sorry, but like so Iraq also massive oil production operations, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So why was Kuwait able to exceed those quotas? It seems like they were bending the rules a little bit, or like how are they able to go about that in such a seemingly passive aggressive way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. OPEC is a cartel. You know, and I know cartel has some sinister connotations, but OPEC essentially exists to slow the faucet of oil and
regulate prices, right, at the very least, even them out. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right, right. So it's price fixing, and it is focused on providing predictability and stability for oil exporting nations. However, it's a paper. Basically, they sign a piece of paper saying, we'll do this, we'll agree to this.
Yeah.
And there's not a way to stop them from going back on their word.
Well, and there are real world constraints on an oil producing country, right? And all of it's measured in barrels per day, which is the thing OPEC can kind of control, right? How much money can you get for that single barrel of oil? And, you know, if you can only make X number of barrels, when that price fluctuates, you're in the economics of your country can fluctuate wildly, right?
Yes.
Which is what's happening here and why it felt like, let's say, to Iraq that Kuwait had its boot on its neck in some way.
Well, it's a good example of putting all your economic eggs in one basket, even if that basket or those eggs are incredibly valuable. It's still one thing, right? And that can hamstring you down the line if you don't have a more diverse economic outlook, right?
Yeah, like RZA said in the Chappelle show, you got to diversify your portfolio. And this
diversify your bonds.
Exactly. The bonds. Yeah, the bonds. I went with portfolio because it sounded a little more economically minded, but shout out to Chappelle show. So did Hussein take a lesson from our pal, King Philip, street name Heavy P, because that he handles Kuwait the way that Philip handles the Templars. He says the best way to resolve this massive debt is to remove the creditor from the board. The U.S. disagreed, as did most of the world. The United Nations and the Security Council specifically adopted two separate resolutions in the beginning, and they imposed economic sanctions against Iraq. The United Kingdom and the U.S. deployed forces into Saudi Arabia, literal boots on the ground, and at the same time, they urged other nations to follow their example. Eventually, as you said, Noel, they ended up with a coalition of 42 different nations involved in some way, and the wallets were open. Billions of dollars are powering this endeavor. Officially, it was an estimated $60 billion. However, we know war is messy, and so a lot of that money, the real toll financially is probably much higher, and we're never going to know the full extent of expense here, but we do know the bombing begins in January of 1991. And for any students of warfare, there are several notable aspects of this conflict. There are a lot of first-time things here.
Yeah. Do you guys have memories of watching the Iraq War, like the invasion and the green cameras, the night vision stuff? And I just have clear visions of CNN showing, you know, all of this stuff and watching it with my parents, just trying to understand what the heck's going on.
Well, and I sort of alluded to that earlier, just about this being, you know, or Saddam being almost like elevated to this big bad level by this kind of coverage. And I guess I didn't realize until I was looking at some of the research that Ben did here that this really was a first, and that this kind of coverage prior, even with like the Vietnam War, there were no embedded journalists. It was all stuff sent to the news stations that was very much controlled by the military. And of course, even the embedded journalists were very much controlled and handled by the media. But this was still different. It was very different. And yes, I do remember all of that.
Yeah. Real-time updates. The media forces and the government forces could attempt to sanitize what was depicted. But just like how live programs can have curse words slip through, you can't clean all of the footage. So for many, many citizens of the U.S. and the world entire, they were seeing the unedited reality of conflict. And it's a very, very ugly, strange, dangerous thing. This is also, I didn't know this, three of the largest tank battles in all of U.S. history also took place at this time. This is also the first time people depleted uranium in a large scale.
Yeah. Hey, and head over to our YouTube channel and scroll all the way back to August 2023 to watch our special on it's the Gulf War Syndrome, Agent Orange, and depleted uranium. There's three separate videos, so definitely check that out. But guys, this is also Nurse Nariah, right?
Yes.
The testimony in 1990, well, I guess it's right around the time of Iraq invading Kuwait, is when we got the Nurse Nariah testimony that we've talked about on the show a couple times that turned out to be not true, dealing with, what was it, babies being taken out of
incubators.
Incubated, yep.
Yeah, we cover it in our book as well. I think it's chapter 5, I want to say, propaganda. Or maybe it's, it might be chapter 8, political corruption. Banger hit. Check out the art from our pal Nick Turbo Benson. It's true. It's something that people have been talking about for quite a long time. And this would also not be the last of these wars. In 2003, the battle begins anew. In the U.S., this was known as Operation Iraqi Freedom. At this point, still, even in 2024, in the grand scheme of things, the tragedies and heartbreak of war are comparatively fresh. We as a civilization simply do not know the full consequences of these interventions. We do know the threats were real. There were clear and present dangers. The West was very concerned with the Hussein administration's interest in biological and possibly nuclear warfare. And as previous lessons had proven time and time again, it is exceedingly rare, if not virtually impossible, for any government to walk back those ambitions. Once they get past a certain threshold, it is super uncommon. So the U.S. and its coalition, their idea is we're going to cut this off at the bud, or at least that's their, or cut this off at the root, nip it in the bud. You guys know what I mean.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, also, I mean, people will certainly recall this obsession with disarming Iraq, you know, and this idea of weapons of mass destruction was sort of the MacGuffin behind the whole Iraqi freedom operation. And it ended up like not being the case. That sort of comes back in a way, in this story, this idea of this sinister secret thing that may or may not actually exist.
Mm. And the U.S. sought to prepare its forces in advance for the possibilities of nasty things like nerve agents, biological weapons, etc. Like the Gulf War itself, we would not know the full consequences of these preparations for some time. In the decades after the first Gulf War, more and more veterans from all sides of the conflict began experiencing a collection of strange symptoms that they could not explain. Fatigue, insomnia, rashes, diarrhea, intense cognitive issues, you know, we would call it brain fog today, and muscle pain, like all around the kind of things where you would know that you were seriously sick, but you wouldn't have a name to put on the thing, right? You would know, you would be able to name all the stuff it was not. It was not the flu. You know, you would test negative for other things, but you are clearly sick. And this became known as Gulf War Syndrome.
For sure. And I mean, you know, while there isn't a name exactly for this kind of thing, there's sort of a vague, foggy name for a thing that we don't know the name of. I mean, in this case, it was deemed or dubbed Gulf War Syndrome or Gulf War Illness. But according to a report released by the Institute of Medicine in 2013, about a third of Gulf War veterans suffer from what is referred to as a CMI, or chronic multi-symptom illness, which, like we said, is a series of symptoms that cannot be medically explained. And if anyone has ever had to deal with anything like this, or even just an illness that won't go away and the doctors don't believe you or they keep treating it with the wrong thing, it can be so frustrating, you know, because Western medicine doesn't always get it right, you know?
Well, there's a thing where, depending on how rare the illness you've got or the disease you've got, it's like, if you imagine the graph, the more rare it is, the less likely, you know, a general practitioner is going to say, oh, this is it, right? Because you're going to go through the checklist of all the other things that could cause all of those different symptoms. With this Gulf War Syndrome, it is so strange because it is so, there are so many human beings that are experiencing similar symptoms, right? That are, I don't know, broad spectrum, right?
Amorphous.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough because this is not saying that the medical professionals were purposely burying this, but a lot of times these guys feel like there is a conspiracy afoot to suppress what is actually happening to them. And unfortunately, there is a great deal of validity to that concern. We will see as we continue this evening that veteran advocacy groups had to fight tooth and nail to get this acknowledged, not be dismissed. The public is still searching for an official explanation behind Gulf War Syndrome. What could cause these otherwise inexplicable series of ailments? Is it possible, people were asking, that the U.S. government, in a rush to protect their soldiers, accidentally poisoned them? This is the story of PB pills. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll dive right in.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, So does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Here's where it gets crazy. Pyridostigmine bromide. Worked on that one for a second.
It's a doozy. The bromide part alone, I mean, anything I've heard bromide attached to usually isn't something that you necessarily want to ingest. I don't know. Maybe I'm just thinking of like potassium bromides.
Yes. That's the last one I remember, which is the Mountain Dew guy.
Yeah. Which ain't good, right? And there's also brominated vegetable oil.
You're right. That's what
orange
it is.
Soda. That's that one. Yeah.
Orange soda. Yeah. We're here to ruin the things you enjoy. So right now, I could just picture how many people drink Orange Fanta, do you think, while they listen to the show?
Oh, somebody had it in their mouth when you said that.
We are sorry to you. but it
my
is
bad.
True.
The potassium bromide was apparently used as a sedative in the 19th and early 20th centuries, but I believe it was discovered to not be great for you.
Yeah, it happens. And that might be the story with PB pills as well. This stuff dates back. It was clearly established well before the Gulf War. It was patented in 1945. It's been used in civilian medicine since 1955. And primarily, then as now, it is used to treat an extraordinarily rare autoimmune neuromuscular condition called myasthenia gravis.
Guys, is it weird to you at all? And myasthenia gravis, let's stay right there, but just as an aside, is it weird to you guys hearing that medicine is patented in 1945? Just considering, I guess there's chemical warfare occurring in World War II, right? With all kinds of gases and things that people are going to be exposed to. It would make sense that this is around the time when it gets patented and deployed, but it is just
I don't know.
It's a human experimentation thing.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But you know so many things they figure out down the line that's been around for ages, you can prescribe off-label and it does other things. But I'm always suspicious when I hear off-label thrown around. It's like, hey, it just so happens that it kind of sort of does this other thing that we didn't really realize. And let's prescribe it for that, even though it's not for that.
I mean, a lot of medicine and indeed great invention is trial and error and finding something that you didn't intend when you were trying to do another thing unsuccessfully. Shout out to alchemy, which created chemistry. Shout out to Viagra, which was supposed to help with heart problems.
Yeah. The microwave, right? With the something to do with the chocolate that melted in the guy's pocket. Like that was an accident. And then they realized they could harness that.
And I guess if we're waxing poetic, Viagra can help with heart problems.
I mean, it definitely helps with
hard
blood
problems.
I mean, problems of the heart, you know, relationships.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But so here's the thing. Here's why PB pills matter. So this substance is what's known as a cholinesterase inhibitor. There is a protein in your body, if you're human, called cholinesterase, and it breaks down a chemical called acetylcholine. Wildly mispronouncing this, maybe. But the reason this chemical is important, this acetylcholine, is because it helps your nerve cells and your muscles talk to each other. It's like a Zoom call for them or a telephone for them. And as a result, this PB substance helps that useful protein stay in your system longer. It helps your body activate the muscles. It lessens muscle weakness. So if you have a condition like myasthenia gravis, this is a godsend for you. It just keeps your body running the way it should. So it's preventative, right? Since this stuff helps your nerves and your muscles communicate, then the theory is, the logic is, that if another substance interferes with that communication, these PB pills can sort of hold the line. They can lessen the impact of some very nasty stuff.
Sounds good.
Oh, yeah, it sounds great. I think we're done for today.
Are there a lot of people in the military that have myasthenia gravis?
Not a ton.
Not disproportionately, maybe, with the rest of the population.
Weird. Yeah.
It is a little weird, but, like, you know, of course, I was, you know, sorry, we're not talking about potassium bromide, but I did look it up just to see what I was thinking about, and it was taken off of the market. It's used in veterinary medicine, but it's taken off the market for human use because of a litany of side effects that just outweighed any positives, and it was used as a sedative, and other, they call them hypnotics, had come out that were far more effective. So it was fully pulled for human use, and now it's apparently only used to, you know, subdue pooches and kitties. But let's talk about the side effects of this other bromide situation, these PB pills.
Oh, it's got them. Like every good drug, it's got side effects, and it's the scary stuff you gotta read in the ad.
It's the fine print that they say really, really fast.
But in this case, there's no ad for this. You just get handed some, you know, as a person in the military. But let's talk about them. There's uncommon side effects, as again are always read in the ads. Well, let's
currently welcome. Welcome to the good guys, Marine. Take these. Make sure you don't get hit with nerve gas, but just in case you do, you're going to want to take some PB pills. Oh, thank you, sir. Currently, these are uncommon side effects, but include stuff like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, stomach cramps and cramps, twitching, or weakness of the muscles.
Wait, how is it going to cause weakness of the muscles? It's supposed to do the opposite.
Wow. Is your specialty questions? Get out of here. You know what I mean? Like, that's, and also there's a hell of a Venn diagram, right? Between, again, slowly, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, stomach cramps, muscle cramps, twitching, and muscle weakness. That's pretty similar to Gulf War syndrome.
Is this an antidote situation? Like, are you only supposed to take these if you're exposed to nerve gas? No, it's an all-the-time thing, ain't it?
Yeah. It's a prophylactic. Yeah.
Oh, but
it's preventative.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, I have a very specific image of that word that pops in my head when it's used.
I think most people do. Technically, it is preventative, but it's not a vaccination. The idea is that if you are in a conflict situation, right? If you're in the armed services, you're out there in the Middle East, you might get exposed to nerve gas from Hussein's forces, stuff like sarin or Soman. And then this stuff will... It won't cure you, but it will make it more likely that if you are exposed to a nerve agent, you have a higher chance of surviving with no long-lasting ill effects.
Quick review. What are the effects of these agents, or some maybe hit lists of some particularly gnarly effects if you get hit with a nerve agent?
It's going to mess with your body's ability to have your nerves connect to your body. It's the communication that the PB pills are actually supposed to be helping out here, right? And the concept of taking them every day, the way that we were told by our anonymous listener, is that you never know when a chemical attack could occur. It could be in, you know, the place where you're sleeping, and all of a sudden there's a nerve agent or something that you're going to be affected by. So you've got to make sure it's in your system, just continually cycling. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail, but let's get back into
what. Not at all. I think that's incredibly important, but it's funny how some of the side effects of nerve agents are kind of similar to the side effects of these pills.
Right, exactly. And again, a lot of people who are taking these, they are trusting the authorities. They are not themselves medical professionals, but like most people listening to tonight's show, they would like to not die. And so this is where it gets tricky, right? Like many substances, this was always thought to be non-harmful below a certain threshold, and that's where it gets tricky. How can we keep track of how much an individual person ingested and when? The VA, Veterans Affairs, has a lot of information on this, and we pulled some quotes directly from them.
Yes, we did. And here goes one. PB pills were supplied to service members as 21 tablet blister packs with prescribed dosage as one 30 milligram tablet every 8 hours. Veterans' actual exposure is not known because pills were self-administered, and there are few examples in individual or unit health records from the Department of Defense. And we're going to get to a real weird reason why that's the case, aren't we, Ben? Mm-hmm. There was some... very interesting instructions that were given when people were handed these pills.
Yeah, and there's a huge caveat in there that we have to spend some time on. The VA, then and now, is saying that soldiers were left on their own when it came to the dosage. They were given recommendations, like we outlined, but administering the PB pills was up to the individual themselves. And so if we ask ourselves how the dosing worked, like you said, one 30 milligram tablet every 8 hours. So that is, for some quick math, that's 90 milligrams every day. And the FDA recommends that people who have myasthenia gravis take up to 600 milligrams of PB pills or the PB substance every 24 hours, depending on the needs of the patient.
And I saw this in a couple places, but not everywhere about this stuff. There was some indication from folks that they were asked to destroy records of who received these and whether or not they were taking them. Or again, if it's self-administered, there wouldn't necessarily be a record of how many times or how often they were taken. But I did hear in a couple of talks and in some articles that there was this sense that they didn't want a record of like how these were distributed.
Right. Similar to burn pits or documentation of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and just to go back to our anonymous listener again, this person said that they chose not to self-administer the PB pills, or at least they began just a little bit and then stopped. But then this person witnessed a whole bunch of other people in the same platoon who are taking it religiously, like just won't like, oh, it's 8 hours. I'm taking my pill.
Well, there were apparently a lot of bullying tactics deployed by commanding officers as well, saying if you didn't take them, you're going to get, you know, have to scrub the or whatever, you know, or not be court-martialed, but just inconvenient, mean-spirited kind of tasks.
Right. And from their perspective, by the way, these commanding officers are kind of doing like a tough love thing.
Yeah. I'm trying to save your life.
Take your medicine, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Saving your life, maggot. All right. Yeah. It's like that's kind of the energy that they had. They weren't purposely trying to poison people. And also, you know, another thing about the horrors of conflict is that it creates superstition, right? Very quickly. So even if you are not going to be involved with any kind of nerve agent, you can feel a sort of safety by taking the thing. You know what I mean? Like every so often I do this and this is somehow a safety measure, even if I don't know how it works.
Totally.
And look, not everyone, here's the thing, not everyone who took these pills, these PB pills, got sick. And not everyone who fought in the Gulf War returned with Gulf War syndrome. There is therefore a mystery afoot, and to those who believe the government may be covering up something, this leads to a series of increasingly disturbing allegations.
It does indeed. First and foremost, and probably the most plausible, let's just start from where they stemmed from. These were from veterans and veteran advocate groups, which includes a lot of different individuals, whether it be family members trying to go to bat for their loved ones and speaking out publicly. I saw a really, really great TED Talk from a woman named Jennifer Jackson Gourilas, G-K-O-U-R-I-L-L-A-S, who had a loved one, and she does this talk as an advocate for that individual. But then there's also, you know, Veterans Affairs groups, and less so maybe the VA, but there are advocates groups that sort of exist to improve the way the VA functions, right? So the most plausible that comes out of these various sources is that Uncle Sam administered PB pills without proper oversight, methodology, and research. Because this was put out without FDA approval, they were given something called a waiver, which I believe is very similar to what happened with COVID-19 vaccines.
Guys, I found that the waiver again. I have it on my refrigerator now. I think we mentioned this several episodes back, but it's the waiver that you got in place of actual like consent and information about a drug because of that emergency act. And it's just basically you're saying, look, I understand this is an experimental drug. There could be side effects that we don't know about yet. Haven't gone through clinical trials, but we're taking it anyway. And I'm doing it on my own volition.
But isn't that counter to like the Nuremberg Treaty or whatever it was? I forget if it's a treaty, but there was some official document that makes it illegal to experiment on vulnerable populations. And you could very much class people in the heat of battle who are terrified for their lives. And to your point, Ben, wanting that safety blanket, even if it's just a feeling, they'd be more compelled to take something like this if they're in that situation, therefore making them vulnerable. Doesn't this go completely counter to that?
Well, they didn't. In their opinion, this was not an experiment. This was not human experimentation. In their opinion, this was a kind of like a Band-Aid rollout of something. You know what I mean? Like you would say, hey, we understand the concept of parachutes. Therefore, it is not human experimentation to have people jump from a plane with a parachute.
Well, yeah. And theoretically, this is almost a piece of technology that it is a piece of technology that can be deployed with your troops to lessen the effect your enemy's weapons have on them. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a greater good argument. And that leads us to just to follow that first allegation. They didn't do their homework. That's the first allegation, right? The intentions were good, but there wasn't enough due diligence applied before this was rolled out to a ton of people. The second, more sinister allegation is that someone in the halls of power may have known full well that there was potential for ill side effects, and they either buried it or ignored the research.
That's tough. That's the old fodder viewpoint, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Like we know that these guys are going to be down there with the enemy tanks. They might be in tanks themselves. There is a much higher chance that one or an entire group of these human beings gets killed in combat. Let's take this precaution, even though it's dangerous, because it is also likely that they will get killed anyway.
Right. Yeah. If that's true, that means the U.S. government ran a brutal cost benefit calculus, right, or calculation, and they concluded, look, the potential for harm is below a certain percentage in combatants, so it's an acceptable risk. And that might sound morally repugnant because, you know, it is. Yeah. But we have to admit there is a contextual logic to it. Would you rather risk injury to, say, 1 out of 3 soldiers, or do you want to roll the dice on Saddam Hussein and nerve gas, knowing that if you don't try to prevent that deployment, it will kill thousands of people very quickly?
Yeesh. Man, I don't want to be the one making those kinds of decisions. Thank you very much.
Do we have evidence that the nerve gases were deployed, that definitely were deployed? Or is this all preventative for a thing that may, like I was asking earlier, may or may not have actually been on the table?
At the time, they were in a little bit of a black box, but they were pretty sure that sarin, cyclosarin, and mustard gas were possessed by the Hussein administration. And if they were possessed, then they would be used. That was the only logical conclusion they could make. And I'm not defending them, but I'm just saying from their perspective, we can see the steps that they walked through. Right.
Oh, well, there was an extensive chemical weapons program in Iraq, right? And we know that from history. Like,
yes,
that was a thing. in the 80s specifically. So it's, I don't know. There, if you listen to Immortal Technique, the you know, we knew they had chemical weapons because we helped them get them or sold it to them.
Oh, we sold it to them. I'm sorry. I totally forgot about that detail in that previous conflict, right? I believe with Iran. We had sold, they were our allies at that point, and we sold them these various agents, which is what led us to do the research to figure out how to use the PB pills in the first place, right?
Poppycock. Well, no, I'm kidding. You're right. Well, you're right. You're right.
History sometimes, you guys, is such a he said, she said kind of thing. You know what I'm talking about?
History is written by the victors, which is a terrible editorial standpoint, but it's the standard operating procedure, right? There's a third unproven and more sinister allegation, wartime profiteering. We know that pharmaceutical companies have an outsized lobbying influence. And just like defense companies, they make a lot of money from government contracts then as now. So is it possible then that private pharmaceutical companies successfully lobbied to get their products sold? Consequences be damned.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Just the contract, that government contract to buy all the pills.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
And none of this is proven, right? I mean, we know that they did sell the pills to the government, but we can't ascribe motive. There's no smoking gun for it. And that leaves us with the first allegation as the most likely scenario, because there may be some science to back up this idea. There were discoveries made about PB pill exposure far after it was given to America's fighting forces. Suggest we take a pause for a word from our sponsors and then put on our How Stuff Works hats and dive into some disturbing science.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
And we've returned. So let's just get into it, guys. Veterans Affairs officially says that these PB pills that we're describing in this entire episode are not connected to the thing that is recognized as Gulf War syndrome, right? That's the official stance.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the official conclusion. But the science appears to go back and forth. In 2015, or we found a study from 2015 at Baylor University, a pretty small study, but it found something revolutionary. It linked the use of anti-nerve agent pills, PB pills, to Gulf War syndrome, and it also found a missing link, a possible genetic factor that would result in sickness. There's an article from the Military Times that puts it this way, quote, genetic factors may contribute to a veteran's risk for Gulf War illness, which they were calling it at the time. And this study links the PB pills and their adverse effects to the genetic makeup of individual soldiers. So there's a gene variant that, to put it very simply, because we are not geneticists, there's a gene variant that complicates your body's ability to metabolize chemicals in these PB pills. And if you have this variant, then you are going to be up to 40 times more likely to have Gulf War syndrome symptoms. And people who don't have this variant are going to be fine.
Wow. And
it's something, you know, it's something no one, like the idea of searching for cyanide poisoning or attempting to diagnose an illness. It's something people just didn't think to look for, is the argument.
Jeez. I'm just thinking about what 40 times actually means. So I was just imagining someone telling me, hey, Matt, you have 2 times the chance of getting in a car wreck if you leave your house in your car today. So I would be like, oh, not going to do that. But if somebody said, hey, Matt, you have a 40 times larger chance of getting in a car wreck today, Jesus, I'd be like,
Maybe I'll stay home.
I'm gonna sell my car.
Play Skyrim.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird too, because, you know, it reminds me of, the genetic factors and things like the taste of cilantro. You know, this genetic variant is likely something that most people will never know about themselves. It simply won't come up because genes are very complicated and you don't think about them most of the time, right? Mm-mm.
No. And well, and this drug, these chemicals that are in this drug were meant to be administered only to people who were dealing with a pretty rare problem, right? So like, I'm just thinking about the number of people that it would have gone to if it weren't being used for this purpose. We never would have known that there were any major issues.
The original thing was rare, like, right?
Yeah, because if you think about a clinical trial with side effects, like any drug that gets tested, there are a few people that develop cancer. There are a few people that develop things, and it may have nothing to do with the actual drug that's being administered. It may be what that individual was going through prior to getting the drug, but because it was involved in the trial, you have to list it, right?
Yes.
And when we're talking about people that had Gulf War illness or Gulf War syndrome, whatever, that is, it's within a niche specific community, obviously. And people, I believe, that even in interacted with some of those folks, like family members, I believe, even could have received some effect from this. But it's not a tiny number. What we're talking, like, in the dozens of thousands? Like, do we have that data?
Yeah.
It's a little hazy, and it's not certainly not really confirmed by the government per se.
No, the government is still disagreeing with veterans and their advocates. And originally, they were out of sight, out of mind about it, and they discredited a lot of things that they should have been looking at. That's not a political statement, no ideology applied. Objectively, that is true. And even now, the U.S. government officially considers what we call Gulf War syndrome to be a, quote, cluster of medically unexplained chronic systems, end quote, meaning they acknowledge something exists, but they don't conclude much else about it. They don't even like using the term Gulf War syndrome. They say the symptoms vary far too widely.
That's the thing too, right? Like these are unrelated symptoms that don't usually get lumped in with the same malady. That's another thing that made it difficult for medical practitioners to kind of figure out based on the normal clues they would usually have. It's like a set of symptoms that equals something like a particular condition or adjacent conditions. But these were, it was a real mystery.
What if PB pills are one part of a much larger equation?
Yeah. What if history is not super cut and dried? What if real life is kind of complicated, just like people's genetic code? This is something that the VA seems to tacitly acknowledge because they say the following, quote, certain chronic unexplained symptoms existing for 6 months or more are related to Gulf War service without regard to cause. So if you are a veteran and you were in theater during that time, then you can apply for disability, for compensation, for assistance, without specifically, without the VA having to specifically say Gulf syndrome is real and you have it. They can just say unexplained things. Well, you happen to be in the Gulf War.
We know the government is all about plausible deniability, both internally and, you know, publicly, especially publicly. They have whole divisions that are designed to do damage control about this kind of stuff. And we know that they're not going to treat somebody or give them extra treatment because that would acknowledge that the thing exists in the first place and that it was their fault.
Right. A lot of the conspiracies that you see in the world of government are someone messed up and then someone tried to cover it up, or CYA, right? And there are, to your point, Matt, there are other possible causes, and they likely did affect people. We're talking about things like burn pits, oil well fires, because this is a resource war, right? Oil wells are set on fire in Kuwait by the Iraqi army as they're retreating. They're doing a scorched earth thing, right? If I can't have it, you can't either. And the smoke from those fires was inhaled by a lot of soldiers on both sides of the conflict. And a lot of those folks went on to have acute pulmonary consequences, like, you know, asthma, bronchitis, etc.
It has to do with your lungs, right? Pulmonary?
Oh, yeah, and other chronic effects. Yes, yes,
just throwing that out there in case anybody didn't catch it.
When did we talk about burn pits recently? It feels like a blur, but I swear it came up very recently about the kind of nasty stuff that they were burning, you know, near camps or in the midst of camps.
Yeah, but this wasn't Gulf War. We were talking about Iraqi freedom. We're talking Afghanistan. Yeah, yeah. It's a thing, you know.
For sure. And I think I had mentioned earlier the idea of the PB pills, there being some obfuscation going on in terms of the records. I think I was maybe misconstruing that more with what you were saying, Ben, that the locations, uses, and proximity of these burn pits, they have a very hard time producing any records about that, as well as medical records for the folks that were around them. So DOA did a pretty crappy job of tracking this stuff.
Well, also, it's kind
of, if not outright covered it up.
Right. It's kind of a supply chain dilemma as well. You know, one of the most expensive parts of fighting a conflict abroad is you have to build the logistics out. You have to build the supply chain. So when you have a bunch of trash and things that you need to throw away, you don't have your, you know, the city garbage truck to come by.
Halliburton doesn't send in a, you know, a Chinook and pick up all the garbage?
Yeah. They're a little expensive.
Oh, weird. guys, what? We received, I don't know, I'd estimate a dozen personal accounts from different individuals who talked to us about burn pits at very specific camps, very specific bases that in it was the range of like a very large, like forward operating base to just a place where when you first arrive in Iraq,
camped
there was a
on
burn
the side
pit.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It seems like it was just. Seems like they could figure out where there was a burn pit, because if there were troops there, there was probably a burn pit.
And I'm sure that you guys saw this in your research as well, but I did find a full text, I guess, version, very, very no bells and whistles, of the second report by the Committee on Government Reform and Oversight, which is indicated as a investigation into Gulf War veterans' illnesses. It says VA, DOD continue to resist strong evidence linking toxic causes to chronic health effects. And if you do a search for the word records in this, 76 instances of that occur, and almost every one of them tied to a "there are none." So just that's where I got that information. It's a real report from 1997 from Congress.
And there are there's a lot of research on the part of legislative bodies regarding this, and it continues because, you know, these individuals for a long time were, again, they were being roundly ignored. And we're going to get to something here, another possible cause that should bother you. But first, actually, they should all bother you. But first, let's talk about depleted uranium. The Gulf Wars, the first time this stuff is used on a large scale.
As a weapon, right?
Yeah, in military applications, wow. DU, or depleted uranium, is ideal for use in armor penetrators. As one Marine friend of the show put it, it shoots through stuff good.
Yeah.
Especially tanks, the armoring on tanks, right? Which we know in the Gulf War, that was an issue. There were big tanks that were coming at you. The U.S. had larger tanks, more technologically advanced tanks, and depleted uranium rounds.
And this is just a byproduct of nuclear energy creation, or where is this stuff coming from? They just have all this depleted uranium laying around. Is that right? It is kind of just like a trash that they're reusing to blow up tanks?
Yeah, depleted uranium is naturally occurring uranium, and it's been stripped of most of, but not all, of the radioactive goodies. And it is a byproduct. It comes from preparing uranium for nuclear applications.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. And how lucky for them that they were able to make lemon to lemonade or whatever.
Well, yeah. And it does stick around, right? It's uranium. It doesn't just naturally decay real quick.
No.
It's a radioactive substance.
Yeah. But it's great for shooting stuff, is the thing.
Real good.
It's really good at it. It's also really not good for humans. And if you ever are hanging out with some friends on the weekend and they're like, "Hey, do you want to play with depleted uranium?" You should say no. I hope that's not a hot take.
Okay. Good to know.
Well, just imagine though, if you're in that situation and there are DU rounds going off all over the place, especially in, you know, a large battle in maybe a somewhat urban environment, right? Where you're now going through that same city that you just shot up like crazy, that stuff's in the air via like dust. That stuff's on the ground.
Are there SOPs for wearing gas masks or protection when circling back through these areas?
I'm sure.
Yeah. There's always going to be a standard operating procedure or like a order of operations for stuff, but that can fall to the wayside very quickly in the chaos of a hot conflict. Multiple studies by the U.S. government appear to show that, yes, depleted uranium is nasty stuff, but they conclude it does not itself cause what we call Gulf War syndrome. Double, however, so that's two howevers for us playing along at home, since 2011, U.S. combat veterans can still claim disability compensation for any health problems related to depleted uranium. And this is up to the VA. They decide it on a case-by-case basis, which means, yet again, you're at the mercy of bureaucracy, right? And this is not to disparage the people working at the VA. It's the system that's the problem.
Yep. Because it really does become bureaucratic, as you said. Where were you deployed? When were you there? What, you know, battalion and blah, 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 all that stuff. And then you can basically, the VA could say, well, there's an X percent chance that you were actually exposed to DU, right? Which could be good or bad.
And it's like, do you have the right form from the right medical professional? Oh, do you need to see the medical professional? Okay, that'll be like a couple years. I mean, hopefully it's not that extreme, but there are systemic problems here. This is another cause that we personally don't care for. And It was bandied about a lot in the early days. Factions of the U.S. government were going to veterans and saying, well, you think you have Gulf War syndrome, even before they had a name for it. They said, what you really have is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Now,
gaslighting.
Yeah, before we continue, PTSD is very real. It can affect absolutely anyone, civilian or military alike, given the right circumstances. It happens. It is a real thing. We're not dismissing that, but we are saying lumping all of those proven physiological symptoms of Gulf War syndrome into one umbrella and saying it's just PTSD, that can seem profoundly offensive to some people. It is like gaslighting. It feels like that. It's dismissing a genuine health condition as being, quote, all in your head.
It's
and
in
that
your
is
mind.
Messed up.
Yeah. Not cool. It's not and cool. Again, we, you know, I mean, not to get personal, but like, you know, my kid has an aversion to certain types of antibiotics, particularly penicillin. It causes a severe psychological reaction. There was this time where they were given penicillin and all of a sudden, like, we're acting like they were having an emotional, anxiety attack, basically. But that's a really hard thing to convince doctors to believe in. Because they don't, there's not a whole lot of exact precedent for it, but it happens every time. So this is like that, but with even more documented cases. And you basically got people saying, sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. That's all in your head, buddy.
I would say I have personally been diagnosed with PTSD one time by a neurologist, and it was not that huge collection of symptoms that are, you know, those that are described as Gulf War syndrome. So for my money, guys, It makes sense that PTSD is a component of all that other stuff.
Yes.
But it is not the thing.
It is right. a portfolio, as I believe he said earlier, Ben. You know?
Yeah. It's an Ocean's 11 of terrible stuff. You know, it's a heist crew on your health. And the question is it aided? Has this heist crew been aided and abetted by the U.S. government? Unfortunately, at certain points in the narrative, that appears to be the case, right? And the VA and other research organizations have concluded that evidence does not support an association, a causal connection between PB pills and what they call chronic multi-symptom illness, and what the rest of the world calls Gulf War syndrome. But the VA still, again, says if you have chronic unexplained symptoms existing for 6 months or more that are related to your time in the Gulf War, then you are deserving of assistance, compensation, and resources, regardless of what the cause is, what the official cause is. So really what they're saying, again, is agree to disagree on the specifics of what's happening, but we will help you, in theory. And this, like, it seems like, I don't know, after looking into this, folks, we believe the most likely factor for PB-related GWS, Gulf War syndrome, it has to hinge on that previously unknown genetic variant. And again, there are people who never took PB pills who do have Gulf War syndrome, because as we've shown, there are other factors that can create this.
Yep. And I do wonder how many of those factors add up to create, like, how many do you need, right? Do you need the burn pits and the PB pills, and then you're in Gulf War syndrome territory? Do you need PTSD and burn pit? You know, like, just what are the things?
It reminds me of the stuff with AstroTurf giving people cancer, where it was really difficult to show the correlation, or no, maybe causal. I can't remember. I always get those confused. I know the difference, but there was something with that where it was very tricky to show that these people that got cancer definitely got it because they were rolling around in AstroTurf.
Right. Because
there were other factors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is all unfortunately true. We know that the idea of a genetic variant can explain why some people ingested these pills with no lasting effect, while others may have incurred lifelong medical consequences as a result, even when following official guidelines to the letter. And just like the VA decides stuff on a case-by-case basis, the causes of Gulf War syndrome for a lot of individuals in the armed services may vary case to case as well, to your point, Matt. And the most important thing here is that if you served in the Gulf War in Operation Desert Shield or Desert Storm anytime after August 2nd, 1990, the VA wants you to know that you may be at risk of certain health conditions. So they are admitting that something is up. And that is, as strange as it sounds, that's actually progress from the 1990s. Now they're admitting the house is haunted.
And like you said, Ben, I mean, that's a big deal because that just doesn't happen unless they've got no other route, you know, and at that point, it's like damage control.
Really quickly, guys, imagine 23 years after that August date in 1990, we made our video series, right? And then what, 10 years later? Less than 10 years later, we're talking about it again. And yeah, it's still a problem. Just the span of time. And there are people out there who have been dealing with this since 1990, or at least, you know, 1991, 92, after they were exposed to all this stuff.
Well, you know, we haven't really talked about personal experiences or personal accounts of people that actually suffer from this, but they are out there. That TED talk I mentioned, TEDx talk, if you want to hear someone describing how debilitating this is for a loved one, that's a good source. And just search for, you know, Gulf War Syndrome testimonials. They're out there. And this is stuff that literally is causing people's quality of life to just being just absolutely in the tank.
Yeah. And there are, you can find, just through a quick YouTube search, you can find some contemporaneous reporting. I'm thinking especially about an interview out of KMOV TV4 in Missouri that was from like 1996. And they interviewed veterans about this before the VA reached its current conclusions. So you can see the pendulum moving in the right direction. But for many veterans, leaving combat only led to another battle, a battle for their conditions and injuries to be acknowledged rather than buried under paperwork or swept under a bureaucratic rug. It is, tragically, a battle that many of our fellow listeners in the audience tonight continue to fight one day at a time. But the VA, as imperfect as it is, it exists to help. So if you or a loved one are experiencing medical conditions, physiological, psychological, as a result of your time in the service, contact the VA at the following number, 877-222-8387. You might be on hold for a while, but that's why they're there, to help you, not to put you on hold, just to clarify. And with that, we want to hear your experiences, Noel, to your point about personal stories. Tell us about your encounters with Gulf War Syndrome, as well as other potential conditions related to combat, and let us know whether you think there's a cover-up afoot. We try to be easy to find online.
That's right. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook, on YouTube, where we have video content galore rolling out every single week, and also on X, FKA Twitter. On Instagram and TikTok, we exist at the handle Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Hey, you want to call us? Talk to us? Tell us a story? Why not call our voicemail system? It is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, give yourself a cool nickname. No government names, please. Unless it's important to you for one reason or another. Generally, if you say your full name, we're not going to use it. We'll like make up a name for you or something. You've got 3 minutes when you call in. If you got more to say than that 3 minutes, or you've got links, pictures, anything, why not instead shoot us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health-Aid Kombucha today.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.